Only about 1% of the genes in our bodies are ours. The rest belong to the trillions of bacteria that live on our skin and in our bowels. They're an integral part of the way our bodies work, including our immune system, metabolism, and even our genes. And according to recent research, these life-giving bugs, huge though their numbers may be, can change in a flash if we alter our diet. Peter Turnbow is from the University of California, San Francisco.
We have been interested for a long time in the various factors that shape the diversity of microbes that live in our gut. These microbes are sensitive to many of the environmental exposures that we're subject to, and they're also intimately linked to our own body, and so they can be shaped by genetic factors and variation in the human genome. In particular, we've been very interested in this tight link between diet. So we think that the food that we eat is one of the major factors that shapes our microbial communities and can change them for better or worse.
And is that because of the bugs in the food, or is that because of the nutrients that you're supplying your bowel and therefore you get a change in the ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a great question. Some foods that we eat, like fermented foods, are rich in microbial diversity. But for the most part, the bacteria that thrive in our gut make that their home. And so they don't tend to survive well in the food that we eat and their long-lasting residence in our body.
Tell me about the studies you've done.
We did a study in humans recently where we wanted to see whether or not you could rapidly change the microbes that are in your gut by altering your diet. And so we recruited a set of 10 people that were placed on two relatively dramatic diets, and one that was all animal products, so they got a selection of meat and cheese, and then another diet that was entirely plant products.
Effectively vegan.
Right. And so we wanted to sort of start with these two relatively dramatically different diets to see whether or not we could reproduce the differences we'd previously seen between different types of mammals. So if you compare the microbial communities of a carnivorous versus herbivorous animal, you find very dramatic differences. And we wondered if we could reproduce that in humans.
And what did you find?
We found really rapid changes in the communities.
How rapid?
Within a single day, we could detect a significant difference. And those differences were most dramatic on the meat diet. And so that involved, you know, changes in the abundance of all sorts of different bacteria. And to some degree, those changes were what we might expect based on the types of substrates or food that the microbes themselves are eating.
So give me a flavor, so to speak, of what sort of bugs were there that people might have heard of.
The two main types of bacteria that are found in the gut, probably most people haven't heard of them, but Firmicutes and Bacteroidetes are the two major phyla of bacteria. The types that most people are probably more familiar with are things like E. coli.
The question here is whether it matters, whether your bug changes in your bowel are neutral, help you out of trouble because they help to circulate cholesterol and things like that in the bloodstream, or get you into more trouble.
That's a great point. And one of the things we found in the study was consistent with a series of recent studies that have been done by Eugene Chang's lab at the University of Chicago. So they described a really interesting mechanism where microbes in the gut can contribute to inflammatory bowel disease, where they showed that if you feed mice a diet rich in saturated fat, you can drive an increase in the production of bile acids, which are released into the gut. And then those bile acids have a really strong antimicrobial effect. So there's only certain bacteria that can thrive in high concentrations of bile.
So this is from your gallbladder and your liver.
Right. And one particular member of the community named Bilophila wadsworthii, which its name just means it loves bile. So it can actually eat the bile and produces a lot of hydrogen sulfide. And they showed that in animal models, if they're susceptible to inflammatory bowel disease, that that increase in Bilophila can actually make the disease worse.
Not to mention making your wind smellier.
Exactly. And so what we found in humans was consistent with that, where on this animal-based diet, within the five-day controlled diet period, we saw a dramatic elevation in the abundance of Bilophila, and we saw increases in the concentration of bile acids.
And on the vegan diet?
There we found, for the most part, sort of the inverse relationship. So we saw lower levels of Bilophila and increased levels of bacteria that make their living out of consuming polysaccharides that are, or the complex carbohydrates that are in the vegan diet. That corresponded as well to an increase in the concentration of end products, like the short-chain fatty acids, butyrate, and acetate. So some of those changes are potentially beneficial, but there's a lot more we need to do to figure out how exactly these altered communities could affect disease.
Another question worth asking is, what's more potent, the effects of the bugs in our bowels or the genes we were born with? And that relates to a really hot area in microbiome research, which is the tantalising possibility that the bugs in our bowels can make us fat, or of course, conversely, thin, depending on how efficiently or inefficiently they recycle calories back into our bodies. Peter Turnbow again.
We've been feeding animals either a standard diet that's low in fat, high in fiber, and then shifting them onto what's called a Western diet, which is high in fat but also high in simple sugars. And that's a commonly used model in mice of diet-induced obesity. And what we knew previously was that, just like in our human study, within a single day after switching mice to this Western diet, we see a dramatic change in their gut microbial community. And so in this new study, we were interested in whether or not that effect of diet on the microbial community was stronger than any impact of host genetics. And so we compared mice that have very distinct host genomes in the context of different lines of inbred mice, then also mice that were transgenic, so were missing key genes that might be important.
And what did you find?
And so we found in all these cases, you know, even though there were important differences between mice based on host genotype, that diet was really the dominant factor. And so this impact,
regardless of the genes you were born with, the response of your bowel was environmental.
Right, exactly.
And what did it relate to the obesity? Did you look at the energy efficiency or inefficiency? Because people are saying if you've got an inefficient microbiome, that's what you want to lose weight or keep your calorie balance in a healthy state.
Right, yeah. So previously we've shown that this high-fat, high-sugar, Western diet-associated microbial community can contribute to increased body fat. And the main line of evidence for that is that we do experiments in germ-free or sterile animals. If you compare these sterile animals to animals that are colonized with the microbial community, the sterile animals will be about 9% total body fat. And when they're colonized, that increases to about 15%. So it's a pretty dramatic increase in total body fat.
The same diet.
On the same diet. And even more interestingly, they actually consume more food in the germ-free state.
Oh, really? So they're gobbling away, but
right,
they're not putting
exactly
on weight.
Yeah.
And in humans?
So in humans, we can't, unfortunately, keep people in the same sorts of germ-free isolators. So it's hard to, you know, make the same stark comparison. What we have done is studies comparing obese and lean individuals. And more recently, there's been a lot of studies of type 2 and type 1 diabetes. And there is evidence in humans that there are differences in the microbiome according to the amount of body fat in the host. Of course, it's harder to get at whether or not that's causing the body fat or just a response to it.
So how close are we to identifying, I mean, there's millions and millions of these bugs in the bowel, identifying the pattern of bugs that you could perhaps get in a probiotic, for example?
I think we still have a lot to learn. Some of the initial signatures that were described in terms of types of bacteria that were consistently elevated in obese people have been hard to replicate in human studies. And so we still don't have a good sense for what exactly the set of organisms are that might contribute to obesity. There is some recent progress from animal work where people have shown that even though we don't quite understand how we get there in the first place, there are certain organisms that seem to have a very strong effect. For example, Acromantia mucinophila has... There's a series of studies showing that you can use that to rescue a lot of the effects of diet-induced obesity. That's just one member of the community, but if you supplement it at a high concentration, it seems to outweigh the effects of the other members.
In mice.
In mice, yeah, exactly. So I think it'll be really interesting to see whether or not that works in humans too.
And the bottom line here is that the current probiotics on the market are mainly lactobacilli and don't contain the bugs that we've been talking about for the last few minutes.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, there are some close relatives to the bacteria that are in probiotics in the gut, but they tend to be different strains. And so that's definitely an interest moving forward, is how do we select the right gut organisms to use as the next generation of probiotics?
And what about fecal transplants in people who are thin to people who are fat?
There's actually one sort of anecdotal study that was recently published that you might have heard of, and then there was actually a more concerted effort to try that. A group in Sweden published a report a couple of years ago where they had tried to transplant lean into obese, and they didn't report any significant change in body weight or body fat. They did see an improvement in insulin resistance. The big caveat to this is that we don't really understand how to best transplant a community from person to person. You know, it works well in mice because we start from zero zero. But when you already have an established community, we don't really have a good sense for how we swap organisms from person to person. And then more recently, there was an anecdotal report about somebody that had been infected by C. diff and given a fecal transplant.
Clostridium difficile, which is a side effect of antibiotics.
Exactly. And one of the common treatments for C. diff infection is a fecal transplantation from a healthy donor. In this case, the patient wanted to use a sample from their family member who happened to be obese, and they ended up becoming obese themselves after the transplant. Of course, that's only one person, and it's a very unfortunate outcome.
Beats being dead.
Exactly, yeah.
Peter Turnbow is at the University of California, San Francisco.